You are listening to KUCI 88.9 FM in Irvine. The opinions expressed on this show do not reflect the opinions of KUCI or the Regents of the University of California. For more info, go to kuci.org. Welcome to In the Garden with University of California Master Gardeners. I'm Tina Spindler, a UC Master Gardener and the host of today's program, and I'm really excited with our guest today. I have Jody Cook, who is also a fellow University of California Master Gardener, but more importantly, she's going to talk to us today about creating a natural garden, which I think is something that's pretty high on most of our lists. Jody is a landscape designer, a horticulturalist, and a public speaker, and she specializes in sustainable landscapes. Her company is called My Avant Gardener, and she actually has a second company called Jody Cook Landscape Design. Jody, can you tell me the difference between your two ventures?
Well, first I have to say the first company is My Avant Garden.
Oh, Avant Garden.
And you'll find there are a lot of Avant Gardeners out in the
oh,
world.
I'm so sorry.
I'm an
Thank
Avant
you.
Avant Garden. Yes.
Perfect.
So My Avant Garden really has the sole purpose of removing front yard lawns and replacing them with native gardens.
Wow. So awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. And Jody Cook Landscape Design is more based on doing larger projects. I do demonstration gardens for water districts and other people. And it's really geared more towards project management of larger projects.
Got it. So today what we're going to be focused on for our listeners' benefit is the type of thing that you do under My Avant Garden, because our listeners, and of course the questions we get as master gardeners out in the community, are often about folks wanting to transition to a less water hungry and more naturalistic garden, which, although I think people get motivated to do it for water reasons, I love your philosophy, because your philosophy isn't really just focused on the water part of it. Your philosophy has a bit of a different philosophy. So can you tell us first how you describe a natural garden?
Well, I would say, just to address your point, that the water aspect or the water conserving aspect is kind of like the gateway drug. It just gets people into it. And then after they realize that, oh, that's just a tiny, tiny piece of it, and that's just sort of an added beneficial byproduct, but it's not what it is.
Yeah.
Then it opens up a whole world of sort of other relationships with the garden. So what, you know, I think there is somewhat of a movement afoot out in the world to take this idea of a drought-tolerant garden and start to change the language, to take the idea of a native garden and start to change the language, because many of these things that have labels attached to them have kind of associations or myths around them or kind of preconceived notions around them. So calling it a natural garden is a new way to say something that many people already have.
Right, but I love that, because you're exactly right. When, even as a master gardener, when you say drought tolerant or native, I get certain visions in my mind. But when you say natural, now I'm picturing interactions with birds and butterflies. Even though the native garden would do the same thing, the word natural gives me a different picture in my mind. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think that this idea of the natural garden just simply means, you know, who of us would not want to spend time in a natural place?
Right. Right.
So so that's sort of what it's about.
That is,
and all the connections that come with it.
Yeah, yeah. And in the meantime, what you're focusing on is getting rid of folks' lawns and other thirsty plants and converting them into these natural gardens. And so can you tell me, other than saving water, what are some of the benefits of a natural garden?
I would say we could literally spend the whole time just talking about the benefits, because there are so many, and really, that's why we do it.
Yeah.
So the benefits are so far-reaching. People don't realize, you know, especially here where we are, people's yards are often not that big, and they think that they don't kind of matter in a way, and every everything matters. Truly everything matters to the bigger environment. It matters to the way water flows through our communities. It matters to the birds and the butterflies and insects that frequent our communities. And it matters to us. So I think one of the most important things about this idea of the natural garden is we are part of it. Our choices, our decisions, our ability to experience ourselves within it, that is the natural garden. So this idea of reconciling ourselves into nature, reconciling our built community and our own wants and needs into our place, it's really important. So the natural garden, the benefits of the natural garden to us are is that, or some of the benefits are that is that is it is or are so are healing. So we heal ourselves when we're in natural places, and the there have been so many studies that have shown our cortisol stress levels go down literally within 30 seconds of entering a natural place where we can hear birdsong and we see foliage and flowers.
That would be why my husband will say, "Have you not been in the garden today?" If I'm not a pleasant person.
Oh, thank you.
He knows. Yeah, he knows. Yeah, so it's stress relieving. So that's a huge benefit to us.
And we're finding out even more that it bolsters our immune systems. So the plants release smells, right? They release, they send messages with the smells they release. So, you know, you think of our native sages. They are sending a message with that smell. Flowers send a message. They send a message with off-putting smells, right? So plants send messages with smells. And we are, essentially, we're kind of animals at the core of us.
Sure.
And those kind of biochemical things interact with us too. And so they have they're finding out more and more that interaction with soil, interaction with plants actually can have on a most basic kind of bacterial level benefits to the human body.
Wow, that is so awesome. Yeah. I mean, I know I intuitively feel it. I think that's why I am obsessed with gardening, but you're right. As time goes by, we're reading more and more articles that justify why we feel this way from a scientific basis.
It's true, and especially when we think about soil. I gave a class once, and a pretty significant part of the class was about soil and talking about essentially like the microbiome of soil.
Uh-huh.
And I had a gastroenterologist in the class, and I was telling him that the sort of the cutting edge of plant science, in a way, is based on soil-plant interactions. And what we're now able to discover, just because our methods of measurement have become so precise, and we're starting to discover this whole kind of microbiome that's in the soil that interacts with the plants and how it contributes to the plant's health. And he was saying, well, that's the cutting edge of human science, too, is the human microbiome, that they're realizing that bacteria and things that live within our bodies could be responsible for our health in a way that we just weren't aware of before.
Sure.
So it's the cutting edge of everything.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah.
So it's very interesting.
Oh, that
very
is.
Very sciencey and nerdy.
Yeah,
when
yeah.
When you get into it, you know, the nerd level can get super intense.
Or you can just go out and enjoy the garden. Yeah. Stop and smell the roses, right? So that's some of the benefits that it gives to us, the conversion of your perhaps old-fashioned, sterile, but tidy-looking garden to a more interactive, natural place. What else does it do to take us away from just being selfish and thinking about self? What else does it do for the neighborhood, the community, the environment? What are some of the other benefits of these natural gardens?
I was just thinking about this morning because I'm on this little mission to tape my neighborhood. So what I've been doing is I've been taping sound in my neighborhood to see how many days of the week I can go without the sound of a mower or blower. I'm one of the only natural gardens in my neighborhood. And so pretty much Monday to Friday, I'm hearing the... And so, actually, this morning before I came here, I was looking up. There's an organization that's a partnership with a bunch of entities called QuietCommunities.org. And if you're interested, Google it because it's a partnership with the EPA and all these different organizations that are finding that the particulate matter thrown up by particularly blowers. And the fact that they're two-stroke engines, which are very inefficient polluting engines, are causing a myriad of health problems.
Interesting.
To us, and you know, just throwing up crud into the air, and they're kind of connecting it back to all sorts of issues. Again, I come back to human beings, but I mean, they really are our gardens, right?
Yeah.
So, but noise. So one of the benefits is reduction of noise and reduction of particulates. And then another benefit, and this is super cool, I was talking to you, I think, about this when we first spoke, that these gardens are based on this idea called the watershed approach, which is treating every garden as if it is a watershed, as if it filters water, as if water should move through it in a natural way. And what you start to find when you start to have a lot of these gardens appearing in one place is that because soil has evolved to cleanse, pure, and filter, purify land-based pollution, and our typical way of treating water in our communities is to have it flush down the streets and the sidewalks out to the ocean dirty, and the oceans have never evolved to cleanse, pure, and purify and filter land-based pollution. That's why our oceans get so dirty close to the beach. But our homes that follow this sort of watershed approach, natural gardening approach, allow our little properties, no matter how small, to provide filtration through the soil.
Interesting. Something I don't think anyone thinks about, how they can actually be of benefit in cleansing the water and thereby cleaning the oceans or making the oceans more clean.
It's true because we're all in a watershed. So I work a lot in the San Juan Creek watershed and the Aliso Canyon watershed, Aliso Creek watershed. And in those two, the rivers that directly connect to the ocean are the Aliso Creek and the San Juan Creek. And those two rivers or creeks, during the dry season, 80% of their flow is non-point source pollution, which is essentially the stuff that runs off of our landscapes.
So if we're fertilizing or using pesticides, those are going into our streams and then therefore out to the ocean.
Yeah, so the more we can, and it's coming across our landscapes to the ocean, the more we can filter that stuff through the soil, the more it will run through groundwater into the ocean clean. So that's a huge, huge
thing. Sure,
and
sure.
That's why the water districts are interested in this approach, the California Department of Water Resources, the EPA, is taking, it's sort of decentralizing stormwater.
Yeah.
And that's, I mean, it sounds kind of, again, nerdy, but it's a big deal because the closer we get infiltration to our own homes, the cleaner our beaches get.
Wow.
It's a direct result. Do you know, during the drought, when we have restrictions on our watering, our beaches were cleaner than they've been in so long.
Interesting. Wow. Yeah, because we weren't letting all that water go out and contaminate.
And the rain wasn't flushing
right
down. So so it's really a great thing from that perspective. And then also the idea that we need to start infilling our built-up areas. So we live in coastal California. Coastal California, all of California, but particularly coastal California, is considered a biodiversity hotspot. Now, before we all, get out our, nice hats and our samba outfits and dance and say, "Ooh, hot spot, let's all have some fun." It actually means that from a biodiversity standpoint, the place is in trouble.
It's threatened. Okay.
More than 70% of the species have to be threatened or in trouble of somewhere along the continuum towards being endangered.
Wow.
And for us here in coastal California, that's mostly because everyone wants to live here.
So development.
So it's development.
Right.
And so one of the great things about planting a natural garden is you can start to undo the damage that has
been
done.
Sure. We can live here, but put the landscape back to a more natural state.
And I actually don't even think of it as being back.
Oh.
I think of it as being forward.
Yeah, there you go.
Because we will never restore what was here.
Sure.
It's impossible.
Right.
So my house, I had some work done at my house, and I'm at 80 feet of fill.
Wow, that is super deep.
Yeah, 80 feet.
Wow.
So that's, like a six-story building on fill.
Wow.
So the soil that is under my garden is nothing like you'll see
in
the
USGS way.
Soil maps.
Yeah.
It is not soil.
Right.
It's like some bricks and somebody's lunch in a soda can and God knows what else. And soil that could have come from anywhere.
Right.
You assume it came from close to you.
Right.
But it may not have. Could be filled from anywhere. So the soil we have on our landscapes is not necessarily natural native soil either.
Interesting.
So this is why I sort of think we're actually moving into a future garden.
Right.
This is not a past garden.
Right.
So we're not trying to restore and conserve what was there.
Right.
We're trying to push it into a different climate and different soil. But we're using plants that have a connection with our local ecology.
Well, that's awesome. And therefore, I assume if they have a connection with the local ecology, they are beneficial to our local wildlife?
Mm-hmm, absolutely. And it starts with the soil. So all of the, you know, when we, as gardeners, we look in our gardens, we dig in our gardens, and we get all excited when we see a worm. And we think that that means that we have healthy soil, which, yes, it does, depending. It can mean we have healthy soil. But with the worm, to the worm, from the worm's perspective, the worm is actually like the lion of his little realm. He is eating all of the microbiology that's underneath the soil and contributing to the health of the soil so that everything that comes above the soil can thrive. So it literally starts from the soil. It's really important we take care of our soil. When we remove lawns, a lot of times we have damaged soil underneath. High in salt, really no healthy, functioning soil biology at all.
Yeah.
And so we have to start building that back in. And then once we kind of stop doing some of the things that caused it to be damaged in the first place and put some plants in, the plants are in control from there on out. The plants actually control everything. And then once the soil is healed, everything else comes. You'll start to see birds you didn't know you had waiting for you to put this garden in.
Aww.
Butterflies you didn't know were waiting. They will come while, honestly, while we're unloading plants from a truck, we will see things show up.
It's a party!
It's a party! Here we go,
everybody!
Yeah.
Oh my gosh, that is so fun.
It is fun.
Wow.
And people respond to it too.
Yeah, that is so, so amazing. So, okay, now you've got us all inspired, right? We all want to have natural gardens. Is it hard to install one?
Well, it depends if you're doing it yourself or with a professional. I would say, you know, when I first sort of started dabbling in this, I had what you would think of as a Mediterranean garden. So I had, you know, Artemisia, and I had some of the salvias from Europe and all the plants from Mediterranean regions elsewhere in the world. And I just kind of started dabbling by putting some native plants with them in places where I had holes.
Mm-hmm.
And they really thrived. And that's kind of what set me on the path of going more in this direction.
Interesting.
Because as time went on, and then we went into that long drought, the native plants did better than the Mediterranean plants did. And so eventually I switched them over. But I think that to dabble is easy. Buy a few. Try them out. Learn about them. I think that the most important piece of advice I would give anyone who wants to sort of start getting some experience with native plants is the first thing you need to do is when you see a plant you like, figure out its botanical name. We know that's important. And then Wikipedia it so that you know where it evolved and how it grew naturally. And then you can know, oh, yeah, I have that same condition in my yard, and you can try it out. So that's a way to dabble. And then if you want to just wholesale switch it over,